You are listening to Dishin' and Swishin', the world of women's hoops, on hoopfeed.com.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to this week's Dishin' and Swishin' podcast on hoopfeed.com. And we are wrapping up the NCAA season. There was a phenomenal championship game with an unbelievable 40-0 Baylor Bears winning. Brittany Griner put on a clinic in the final, and I am very pleased to try and give you a different perspective of the game. We've looked at things through the round table the last few weeks of journalists and some former players and a little bit of coaching, but I've got with me three of the best minds in the WNBA to break this down, and I'm pleased to welcome the Seattle Storm's Brian Agler, the Tulsa Shock's Gary Kloppenberg, and the Chicago Sky's Jeff House. Gentlemen, welcome to Dishin' and Swishin' this fine morning.
Thank you. Great to be on.
Well, my first question is, guys, did any of you guys in all of your years of coaching, anybody ever come close to a perfect season like this?
I don't know. Maybe in rec league with 7 and 8 year olds or something, you got really good, but not at this level.
I would say, putting this in a historical perspective, you know, Gary, you know, you're taking over. You've got a young team, an expansion team, and you're also out in that Big 12 area in Tulsa. In a historical aspect, look at 40-0 and tell me, what does that do for you when you see that and think of what it is for an achievement?
I mean, to me, it's an unbelievable achievement. I had a chance years ago. I had some junior college teams that had won state championships in California. We were 35-1, and you know, you go through the season and you're winning, and you feel that pressure of trying to maintain that record. So, the thing that was impressive with me and Coach Mulkey's job is they blocked that out. That really didn't even come into play. I mean, they were so focused on winning that big game at the end, and I just thought they was just stepped up, that especially that second half. You could feel it in the first half that things were building, that when they came out of that second half, just early on, just stepped on Notre Dame, and tremendous accomplishment. It's going to be a long time before we see another team like that.
You know, being up here in New England and seeming to recall a certain football team that flopped in the Super Bowl after going undefeated through the regular season, the pressure that must have been on that team as the season went on and continued to build must have started to feel a little bit of weight. But, you know, Jeff, I didn't see anything that resembled nerves or a lack of confidence through any of the postseason tournaments, from the Big 12 tournament all the way through the championship.
Well, it seemed like Coach Mulkey said in the postgame, it seemed like they focused on process. You know, like they had unfinished business. They used that all year, but they didn't. She said that they didn't talk about winning or losing, you know, not winning games or going undefeated, just about trying to, you know, play at the best of their ability and play at a high level and finish the business that they weren't able to the year before. So I think a lot of times that takes some of the pressure off because you're not focusing on the outcome. You're focusing on how to get there.
You know, Brian, one question I particularly wanted to ask you was, you have faced the prospect of going into a season with the best player. You know, you've had Lauren as the best player in the world for a number of years, and the pressure that goes with winning a championship when you have that best player. Can you talk a little bit about what that is like?
Well, there's no question Baylor had the best player. I think that to win a championship and accomplish the things that they have just accomplished, you have to have other great players, you know, around the individual that we're talking about here. And I think the key player for Baylor this year was Odyssey Sims. It seemed like, and I watched Baylor play multiple times in person and on TV, and to me, she was and is as valuable to that team as is Brittany Griner. I think that for all of us, it's tough to evaluate the other players on their team outside of Brittany and Odyssey because of all the attention that those two players get from their opponents, how good the other players are, although I do think that they're very good basketball players. I think they have a tremendous team and maybe go down as one of the greatest teams ever. it does put a lot of pressure on you knowing that you have the best player from the standpoint that it seems like every time you go into a game, you try to prepare for what you think you're going to see, but it seems like you always see things differently on how they're going to defend the Lauren Jacksons or the Brittany Griners or the Diana Taurasis. And so you have to make adjustments during the course of the game. But it's very essential that you have other people that have the ability to step up and take off the pressure and have the ability to step up and make big plays in the guts of the game.
As we get into the discussion of the game itself now, first question is, did any of you not expect this? Did anybody pick Notre Dame to upset Baylor in this game?
I actually watched Notre Dame 5 or 6 times live this year, and it just seemed like no matter what style they played against, whether it was a pressing team, a transition team, a half-court team, a zone team, they played exceptionally well. So I actually thought if they could, they could figure out what Baylor wanted to try to do early, adapt to it, and then play to their best. They had to play their best game and be at full strength, and unfortunately they weren't. But, they could have a chance. And it, being down 6 at the half with all the foul trouble they had in the first half and all that, they had to feel fairly good going into half saying, we're going to play better in the second half, but that just didn't happen.
No,
I'm sorry, go ahead, Klopp.
Well, I was just going to say, I really felt like watching the Stanford game, excuse me, they really had the personnel and a game plan to be able to beat Baylor. Now, they didn't carry it out. I thought they kind of got away from it in the second half. But personnel-wise and their plan, I thought they did an outstanding job. I felt like Notre Dame, you watch that game, the Griner, they could never get her out of the paint. I mean, whatever they did, she was laying back in the paint. And, that makes life difficult. You just don't get any easy looks with her back in there. And I think, it wore Notre Dame down. They hit some tough shots the first half, and they couldn't get those to go in the second half. But,
go ahead, Brian.
Yeah, my thoughts are, going into the tournament, I thought there were two teams that had the potential to beat Baylor, and that was Notre Dame and Connecticut. And not from the standpoint of how they matched up against Griner or Sims, but just their ability to score the basketball. The more I watch Baylor play, people are going to do multiple things to try to slow Griner down and give her so much attention. And she's still going to get hers. Maybe not at huge levels, but she's still going to be very impactful. But I felt like the way to beat them was to have the ability to score against them because they are such a great defensive team as well, partly because they have size at the rim, but they have great athletes defensively. And Odyssey Sims could put tremendous pressure on the basketball and would come up with big steals. I agree with Gary. I thought Stanford's game plan, I didn't know how Stanford would match up. After watching that game, I thought they matched up pretty well. And I thought their game plan to beat Baylor was one that, for them was perfect. And they put themselves in position to do that if you just take away the foul trouble they got into. And looking back on this whole season, I think, against the very good teams that Baylor played, and they played a tremendous schedule, there's no question, that the X factor that you don't even think about going in the game is how do you stay out of foul trouble? No team could really do that. I think the team that played them the best all season was the game at Baylor when Connecticut went down. I was just watching that game again the other day, and they were ahead late in that game and had opportunities to win. But, again, they couldn't stay out of foul trouble, and Baylor took over at the end.
Brian, staying with you for a second. One of the things that I thought put Notre Dame a little bit in a hole right from the outset was they came out and tried to replicate the Stanford defense with everybody's coming down and falling in on Griner and not covering letting the outside shooters get their shots. But what happened was instead of having somebody that had some size that could be in front of Griner, they put Peters behind her and used the guards in front of her. And what happened was the ball was still getting into Griner and Peters immediately got in foul trouble. Do you think that was a tactical mistake that Muffet tried to get off of their normal on-ball pressure and switch to this other defense?
Well, it's just like we've talked about. Baylor presents such a difficult matchup for everybody that, you know, all these coaches know their teams and their personnel better than any of us. And they're in practice with their people every single day. And, you know, they've watched Baylor play a lot. I know Notre Dame, you know, they played in the first game of the year, and they knew for them to win a national championship, they were going to have to go through Baylor. So they, in some perspective, will probably study in this situation throughout the season. And by doing that, you know, they watched other teams, you know, have some level of success defending Baylor. So I feel like, you know, they probably knew their situation better than others. I do think that if I was preparing to play Baylor down the road, I would attack Griner and really strategize on how to get her in foul trouble. I think there's ways to get her in foul trouble that nobody really took advantage of this year. And I'm not talking about having size in there or throwing it in there on the block all the time. I watched the game the game I was really impressed with was when Connecticut played at Baylor and scored at the rim against them by attacking her and then making passes at the rim. As she would move one way, they would pass against the grain and score. And, you know, it'll be interesting when people have an opportunity to watch and study them in the off season, how they go and attack them next year, knowing that they'll be the, you know, odds-on favorite to win the championship again.
Yeah, Jeff, you said you saw Notre Dame a number of times this year. You know, one of the things that had always been impressive to me was their on-ball pressure, that their defense with Diggins being able to swipe at the ball and Mallory's, you know, physical play, I thought that didn't really appear at all last night. I thought that Sims was able to pretty much control the pace the way that she wanted to, and I thought even the other guards, Hayden, Madden, and to an extent Condrey, were able to do things with the ball where they're just Griner just seemed to influence the defense so much.
Yeah, you know, like Coach Jagler said, you strategize and you game plan for everybody you play for, but the anomaly that is Griner, and then you throw in the factor of at 17-17 of the first half, Peters picks up her second foul. So your game plan and all your stuff that you've worked on, then you've got to, you know, you've got to make some adjustments. Give Coach, you know, Muff McGraw credit. She, you know, she took Peters out. Diggins picks up her second foul shortly after that, around like the eight and a half minute mark. And then now you've really got to figure out, okay, my game plan is out the window. I've got to figure out what I'm going to do. Do I keep them in? If her hard, fast rule is I take people out when they get their second foul. You know, to her credit, she put them back in. She tried to play around with that a little bit. They mixed up defenses. They went man and zone. They went to their tandem. You know, they kind of did a lot of things to keep it close, but, you know, your game plan kind of gets thrown out the window when you start experiencing, foul trouble, and they couldn't make jump shots. They couldn't score inside at the rim. At one point, they had missed, right after Peters went out, they missed seven shots in a row in a close game. So,
I think the team that defends, Baylor the best, and, of course, it's natural because they play them the most, is Texas A&M. Yeah. And if I were a team going to play Baylor in the future, I'd really study that film on how Texas A&M plays them and has played them in the past.
Gary,
I was just going to say one little thing. When Coach brought up of trying to, you know, get Griner in foul trouble, I went back one time when we were watching her and said, how many times has she fouled out? She's fouled out once, and it was during her freshman year. And the most fouls she had in the game this year was against UConn. She had three. So I'd like to try to figure out, because someday we're going to all have to deal with it, how do you get her in foul trouble? Because she hasn't been, you know, and you can play, you're going a 40-0 season and you never foul out once, and the most fouls you had in the game was three. That's going to be a challenge for any team next year, you know, to try to replicate that again.
You know, you have the situation with her also that the referees just don't know what to do with her. You know, there's no question that she takes more of a beating inside than anybody that I've seen in college basketball. But she can give as good as it gets, too. And because she isn't getting all the calls, I think that they don't call a lot on her as well when she bumps into people and uses her body a little bit too.
Yeah, no question. I mean, and you know, she's just so long, and she's developed her shot blocking to such a degree that she's just waiting back in there until people leave their feet, and then she goes and gets it. So I think her development has just been unbelievable. I saw her as a freshman, and you know, she was off balance. She got bumped, pushed out. She brought the ball down. Hey, man, whoever is working on Kim's staff, post-development's done an unbelievable job. She's got the drop step spin. She's got jump hooks, left hand, right hand. She can step out, hit elbow shots. She puts it on the floor from up there. So she's going to be a nightmare when she gets into our league. That's a nightmare matchup for sure. So.
I would equate this and try to attack her sort of like Joe Frazier versus Muhammad Ali in fight number one, where Joe Frazier didn't let Muhammad Ali use his length. He got inside of that and played to his strengths. And I truly believe that's how you have to play against her, knowing that she's going to get some blocks. But, you know, if she – like Novosel attacked her a couple times and drew fouls last night. You know, I thought that was pretty good strategy.
So does it do you guys as coaches, does it do your hearts good to see Anthony Davis as most outstanding player and Brittany Griner as most outstanding player and two teams winning championships with defense?
Well, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, look at Baylor's, you know, she's a great, great offensive player, but everybody can recognize the fact that she has such a major impact on the defensive end of the floor. And, you know, again, they hold Notre Dame to 34% from the field, and they didn't allow a single opponent in 40 games to shoot over 50%. And that's saying a great deal about the defense in this game.
Yeah, I mean, it's true. And I think the key thing with Griner is she and Kim has some outstanding quickness on the perimeter and tough defenders out there. And that allowed, with Griner back there sitting in the paint, that just allows those guys to get out in the passing lanes to put extreme pressure on the ball, knowing that, hey, if they get by me, they got to go deal with her down there. So I just thought she really utilized Griner in a pressure defense situation to the maximum.
Yeah, I think her biggest attribute at the next level is going to be more so at the defensive end than it will be initially at the offensive end. She's going to keep getting better offensively, but you know she's always going to have the ability to challenge things around the rim. I think people, you know, in the WNBA and maybe when she plays over in Europe internationally. And sort of like what Stanford and Notre Dame and Connecticut try to do at times is put her in a ton of pick and rolls and bring her away from the rim where she has to play within a team concept, or if she doesn't, her teammates will get exposed in pick and roll situations and back cutting and things of that nature.
One of the things I thought she did particularly well last night that on that same subject was she stayed home. She has done a lot of, I thought, roving around at the top of the key and even further outside during some of the earlier games as the other posts went outside, she went with them. But she backed off both Achunwa and Peters, whoever she was covering, and allowed them a little space at that foul line and dared them to shoot, and she stayed underneath it, and that really showed in her rebounding numbers in particular.
Well, yeah, I mean, those people aren't great threats on the perimeter. As she advances and gets older and plays against more veteran players, those people are going to be able to step out and shoot and hit three-point shots. And then she'll have to come out and play them a little bit. But as long as – I mean, that's a tremendous strategy. As long as who she's guarding cannot face up and hit perimeter shots, you know, they played it smart by just keeping her at the rim and challenge everything that comes in the lane.
See, it seems like the majority of the teams, like Coach had said – if they didn't have two post players that could stretch defense, and if you tried to go smaller to put two post players that could stretch defense, then you at the other end of the floor, you sacrifice trying to be able to keep her, you know, mid-post and higher. You have to keep her mid-post and higher. At one point last night, she was 0 for 6 when she had touches at the high post, but was whatever, 6 of 7 down low, you know, you got to figure out, pick your poison. Do I want to try to stretch her defensively and make some shots, or do I try to keep her away from the rim on the other end of the floor?
Now, Gary, when you look at the regular lineups for Notre Dame and you look at the lineup that Baylor puts out there, you know, hindsight is a wonderful thing, of course. Would Notre Dame have been better off approaching this, perhaps, with their regular lineup of playing the four guards and trying to whip the ball around and hit those outside shots some more? It seemed that even when Peters got in foul trouble, they brought in not only Achanwa, but then they went with Markeisha Wright, who played 19 minutes, and that's more than she had played in the rest of the tournament. You know, I was surprised that we didn't see more of Kayla McBride on the perimeter. She only played 25 minutes in the game, and I thought that she was going to be a key.
Right, right. Well, I'd agree with that. And I think I don't think you can play conventionally against Baylor and Griner. I think you got to make some adjustments. And I never really saw, you know, Stanford was the closest I saw trying to get her out of the paint and spread the floor. And I know they had some very good shooters. You know, they shot 3 for 17 threes. Otherwise, you know, they're right in that game maybe with a chance to win. But I think you have to get the floor spread with shooters. You have to pull Griner out into some mid or some high angle screen and rolls and make her guard, you know, guard the penetration with the floor spread out. And I never really saw, you know, Notre Dame, they were in a lot of those cuts, hit the elbow, run their cuts. Well, Griner was laying off into the paint. So none of those back cuts really were effective. You know, they came off some handoffs, got a couple of nice mid-range shots, and Diggins came off a couple screen and rolls and dumped it down in, but they didn't, as a steady dosage, do that. And I just feel like you can't play them probably your normal way. I think you've got to do a couple of things to try to adjust to her and get her, negate her from sitting back in that paint and just waiting for you to come down in. And you know, obviously you got to hit a good percentage. You got to hit a good percentage from three-point land to beat those guys this year. Nobody really did that in the finals.
Yeah, your high hat really had to go out to Natalie Novosel, who has played so hard and so well all season. To have a game like that on the biggest stage was so unlike her.
Yeah, I think there were four things last night that happened. That being one of them is Novosel's inability to hit shots. They really needed that. And you know, I felt for her because she had, I mean, Jeff's watched her play a lot. I've watched him play a lot. She's had a tremendous year. You know, she's hit clutch shots for them all year long, and then not have the ability to do that last night was really hurt Notre Dame's opportunity to have success. And then Peters getting in foul trouble, you know, and I thought there were some things, you know, that occurred last night that just didn't go her way. And so those two things from a personnel standpoint on Notre Dame really hurt their opportunities. But I thought there were two big calls last night that really impacted the game, and that was late in the first half when there was a call. Brittany got the ball and went to the rim, really was assertive going to the rim, and Notre Dame stepped in and tried to take a charge. And she was outside the circle, but the call went against them. They thought that she may have been moving, whoever that might have been.
I know the play you're talking about.
Yeah,
I thought that was a huge play. If that would have been an offensive foul, that could have changed the course of the game. And then when Peters set a screen on Odyssey Sims and Sims hit the screen and then went to the floor on a pick and roll, I thought that was a critical play as well that could have impacted the game as well if there had been a no call right there.
Yeah, both those situations were both on Peters. 4:39 in the first half was her third, and 15:26 of the second half, that was her fourth on that screen and roll. And Notre Dame had just cut it to three.
Yeah.
Those were huge.
It's unfortunate that we still end up, no matter what happens, with discussions of calls that really are difficult to justify. I'm trying to be politically correct here. And I don't want to get any of you guys in trouble. But it's unfortunate that the refereeing still has such an impact more so, I still think, in the women's game than the men's game. There's just so much inconsistency from what seems like, timeout to timeout.
Well, it's such a...
Well, I think Baylor's a tough team to officiate against. Officiating's a tough job. There's no question, because the game's fast. You're talking about athletes out there on the floor, and people understand that Baylor's a physical team, especially on the perimeter, and you have to be physical and hold your ground and stand your ground against them. And Odyssey Sims can put a lot of pressure on the ball, so you have to be physical in your screening situation with her. So it's not an easy task to try to officiate games. And then we're not even talking about the grinder situation around the rim. You know how difficult that can be.
Well, Brian, you're so good at being nice about these things.
Well, I have to. All these officials do our leg as well.
Yeah, I know. but I'll tell you, we did see two of the best point guards in the country last night. There's no question about it. And I'm not going to ask you to get involved in the debate of which one's better. Kim kind of threw that out there last night, saying that she has the best point guard in the country. But, you know, it's always nice when you see two point guards that have the confidence in the decision-making process and taking control of a game like that. That is something that I know I always enjoy watching.
Well, their stat line, if you look at it, you know, and they're both exceptional guards. It was almost identical, 1-6 of 16, 1-7 of 13. You know, they just, one has 20 points, one has 19. It's just, it was a very, very, very good matchup.
What was interesting to me in Sims' stat line was the 4 offensive rebounds. And it was interesting that Griner had 1 offensive rebound. It was credited with 1 offensive rebound, yet Sims had 4, Brooklyn Pope had 4, Destiny Williams had 4, and the other guards had 3. So they had 16 offensive rebounds, and Griner only had 1 of those. So they all pound the boards.
Yeah, and that was an MO all year with them, Dave. They would, you watch them, Destiny Williams was just a beast on that weak side, because a lot of those balls, you know, the attention on Griner, the ball's coming off over to his side, so... You know, they just had so many other weapons this year that they haven't had in the past to go with Griner. And I think, you know, and you want to double and triple team Griner, and she's gotten so much better at passing the ball out to the weak side, where they've got some nice spot-up three-point shooters with Hayden and Sims. So they really had – she put together the package around her that they have not had in the past.
Yeah, Brian, you might have commented earlier about – Brian, you made the comment earlier about how difficult it is with Sims and Griner to identify the other players' skill levels at times, you know, and how good they actually are. Well, Destiny Williams, I think, is one of those that could be that good as she continues to improve.
I agree, and you know, Hayden's ability to stretch the defense and hit shots is going to help her too. And you know, when you hit a shot, you know, you just show the skill that you have. I really think that all those statistics, you know, Sims and the other people's offensive rebounding and a lot of their statistics that they get goes back to the Griner factor. I can just tell you that, you know, even last year when we didn't have Lauren Jackson for 21 games, when she came back and still wasn't 100%, just how better our team was just because of her presence. It gives people – because of all the attention those types of players get on the floor, it opens up the game for everybody else on your team. And people are a little bit more courageous to take chances and do things. You don't have to coach so close to the vest when you don't have, you know, somebody like that on the floor. And it just the presence of that great player alone makes it better for everybody else.
Well, Jeff, you coach – Brittany Griner before she was Brittany Griner, you have Sylvia Fowles. And can you talk a little bit about that, what she does on the defensive end in the WNBA now, doing the same type of thing that Brian was just talking about, too, with Lauren?
Well, like Coach was saying, you have your guards feel a sense of confidence where, you know, they can push up and pressure the ball a little bit more because they know if someone gets by them, you know, they're driving into a Griner, or in our case, they're driving into Sylvia, or with Gary, they're driving to Cambage. So, I mean, when there's somebody back there that can alter the game, not necessarily always block 9 shots, but you know she's going to block four or five, or and then alter 10 other ones, and you have to think about her. So are you going to pull up? Are you going to penetrate and kick? Do you have the shooters around, you know, around them that if they do kick, that they'll make shots? So, you know, having somebody back there like Sylvia is a tremendous thing. Sylvia's, you know, a great player and a tremendous athlete on top of being as talented as she is. So she can rebound outside her area. She can, you know, switch on to a guard and keep her in front of her, you know, for the most part. So that is a big advantage.
You know, Gary, what Jeff just mentioned, Big Liz on your team. Now, one thing that all coaches do, and you know, and actually all people in my side of things do, is we all steal from each other. What could you gain from watching what Kim did with Brittany to help you, in addition to all of your experience with post players, in getting ready to put Liz under the basket?
Yeah, I mean, and of course, in our game, we see a lot. There's a lot more screen and roll. I mean, I would say in the pro game, you know, 50% to 60% of the plays either could begin or end with some screen and roll. So it's going to be a big thing for our team anyway, working with Cam Bage to get her proficient at guard and screen and roll a couple of different ways. And I think with a shot blocking big like they have with Griner, and then we could have potentially with Liz, is you want to try to keep the ball out of the middle, keep the ball in the sideline areas, and try to keep your big down and not out way out on the floor hard showing. So there's some schemes that I think you have to adjust and use when you have big players like that you want to try to keep down around the rim for shot blocking and rebounding potential.
Could you guys believe that this was Brittany Griner's first title that she never won in high school either?
Wow. That's amazing, yeah.
I thought with that DFW AAU team, I thought that they had, you know, they had won some stuff, I'm sure. But as far as with school type stuff, yeah.
Yes, you're right. You're right. They had to have. I'm not positive, but there's no way that team could have lost. You know, I just want to wrap things up here. I want to read you a quote that Skylar Diggins had last night and get your comments on that. So, in talking about Baylor, she said, they've got multiple players that can score 20. Every player knows their role, and they play that role to a T. Yeah, that to me is really what makes a championship team, being able to fill those spaces on the floor and know exactly what you have to do in accepting those roles. How difficult is that from a coach's standpoint, and how impressive is that to watch when you see that type of thing happening to perfection?
Well, I think it's extremely difficult. I think as players get older and they get in the professional ranks, it even becomes more of a difficulty. But my hat's off to how Skylar analyzed that, because that shows a maturity and understanding of the game and what it takes to be a champion. And I would have to tell you that I think Notre Dame's a championship team. I mean, I look at their team and what they accomplished. They never really had a huge inside presence. They were very guard dominated and very skilled at those positions. Could score multiple ways as well. But you have to have, you know, an understanding of what your role is and what your roles are on a championship caliber team. I thought both Baylor and Notre Dame has that.
Jeff, why don't you go next?
Well, I would echo everything that Coach said there, and also add that every year is a new year. You know, when if you have veterans or people that have been through your program or your team's philosophy a couple of seasons, it doesn't necessarily mean that that's going to transpire again the year. With how people accept roles or play in a selfless manner and are willing to sacrifice themselves, that has to be rekindled every year. And for Notre Dame to do what they did, you know, from last year to this year, to come back and position themselves, do that again, is a great credit to them and their coaching staff. And for Baylor to set all that aside, they get knocked out, don't even make the Final Four last year, kind of set their mindset of what they're trying to accomplish, and then to go 40-0 and do that again. You know, coaches and players, they can talk about the things that they want to do to set that selfless nature, but then it has to be monitored and taken care of in the locker room by good, you know, good leaders in the locker room and in practice, and players being able to challenge each other in the right way. And, you know, that's just a very, very difficult thing to. That's one of the X factors of any great championship team, is if you can do that every time you try to set forth to get to a championship level.
Gary, since they said all that, I'm going to throw a little bit twist into it to you. How about also adding in the fact that the expectations for this Baylor team were nothing short of a championship, and instead of cowering from them or being afraid of them, they embraced those expectations and went out and took care of business?
Absolutely, Dave. I just think that, to me, that's the tremendous accomplishment that Kim and her staff did with this group, is to keep them grounded and not think beyond each game. About all the other stuff that was going on with it, the 40-0. I mean, to them, that would have been, to lose one game at this point in the season would have been a failure for them. So, I mean, that mindset was that they developed with that team and their attitude, you know, my hat's off to those guys. I think Kim and her staff just did a remarkable job. And, they, you know, obviously had great talent, but they blended that team and everybody had their role. I would just like to say, too, in closing, I thought this was a tremendous tournament all the way through, even from the 64, for starting with 64. I thought there was some great, well-coached teams, some great, great basketball all the way through. And I just think the women's, you can see how much the women's game is growing with the level of talent, the level of coaching, and, you know, besides those final outstanding Final Four teams and how well coached and well executed their teams played, I think all the way through with some outstanding coaching jobs and some outstanding teams.
Gary, any truth to the rumor that you're going to ask the WNBA to put in the territorial draft so you get the Big 12?
Sure. I like that idea. I'm going to put that in.
Well, but, you know, Brian wants the Pac-12 right now, though, so he can have NECA without making any moves.
We'll just drop the lottery. You know, we don't need that.
gentlemen, I want to thank you very much for taking some time this morning. And yeah, I hope you enjoyed the game. And I know I certainly appreciate your insights, and I'm sure our listeners do. And 13 days till it's draft day. And then you guys get to get busy on your own teams.
We go, finally. That'll be great. Thank you very much.
Thank
Take
you.
Care. Take care.
Thanks a lot. Yeah, thank you.